it alive. Through these lines I write, I keep it live, cause I thrive. I might just blow your mind tonight. I'm so hyped, but it's no hype. From this height, it's direct, it's on sight. I'm your type, lend me your ears to show you that there's something in me. I'm not giving up, I'm standing right here, holding these days hostage, and I'll make this my year. We turning fear into love, and the love's in the air. I love doing this cause nothing compares, nothing can share that same type of feeling. When you feeling them flares, they can't catch it, it's havoc. I rip to a tear, switch a scenario, my stereos, I leave them impaired. Variables start to change, and they're all in my range. I just gotta grab it, it's all mathematics. Every step is drastic, I make it fantastic. I'm trying to take your breath away, asthmatic.
This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go, go through the stereo, stereo. This is live through the stereo. Go and let it blow, blow through the stereo. I'ma let them know, no through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo, stereo.
Yeah. Just nod your head with it, so explicit and vivid. Every image is intricate, intimate. I put my all into it, no scrimmage and no rules. I'm a pro tool, hear my heartbeat beat into the vocals. I'm so loco, lost my mind, oh no. It's ponderoso, dope so, no overdose cause it's dope. Yo man, this is house grown, mixed with some milestones. So I let the style flow, down like the Dow Jones. Bringing it with some foul tones, letting the crowd know we getting loud, so it's eardrum rudiments. Yeah, we bring it rude again. Move, little hooligan. Music for tuning in. Full time to the 10. I'm on my clock, like I told you. I'm doing this for dreams we pursuing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Anti-Media Radio. Once again with your host, Nick Burnaby, here on UCY.TV. Thank you all for tuning in, and I'm glad to be back with you on this awesome Monday. Hope everyone enjoyed the moon last night. I know it was all the rage on social media and all that good stuff. We personally had a great time out there enjoying it under the super blood lunar eclipse moon, whatever you want to call it. It's kind of complicated, but it was nice. And it's kind of coupled with this other outer space news when it comes to Mars and the fact that there's supposedly running water on Mars, which is a huge development and, you know, very well could eventually come to, we could come to find out that there's microbial life on Mars, and that's really not that far out there anymore. So the possibility of alien life, even within our own solar system, is becoming more and more of an idea that's acceptable by the mainstream. So it's interesting, to say the least, to watch it play out. And you know, to watch the news and to see how the mainstream narrative reacts to the possibility of life outside of Earth, and you know, it really has major implications for religion and culture and society, and I mean, you name it. There's a lot of implications there that we could definitely be dealing with in the very near future. And you know, I've been seeing a lot of media coverage regarding alien ideas, and there was a guy, I think he was like the fifth astronaut to walk on the moon, talking about it. Another astronaut on his deathbed was talking about it. So, you know, these are ideas that are seeping into the mainstream, and who knows, we could see some kind of revelation soon. I mean, I don't want to jump to any kind of conclusions right now, of course, but as always, keep an open mind to anything, and, you know, anything's possible. Tonight in the studio, I'm joined by our awesome editor, Carrie Wedler. How are you doing tonight, Carrie?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me.
You basically dropped a bombshell story today, and we're hoping that tomorrow it turns into a national media narrative. If it doesn't, I guess we all know why, but we'll get into that a little bit in a few minutes here. First, let me get through all of my... pay all of our dues here. For, secondly, we have DB Schwartz on the call, our longtime co-host. How are you doing tonight, DB?
Doing good, Nick. Just watching things happen, watching what the Pope said, and seeing the globalist agenda kind of move forward. Man, I don't think people know what's going on, and I don't know if we want to talk about that at all, but UN Agenda 2030 is in full swing.
Definitely, man. We did dig into the Pope stuff last week on Wednesday a little bit, but we can go back into that a little bit later tonight. Hopefully we'll have some time. We got to get to this huge story first of all. If anybody out there tonight wants to call in and air your grievances with us or give us your two cents or comment on anything we're talking about, maybe comment on something we're overlooking, that's fine. Give us a call, 718-717-8296. Just make sure you mute your microphone and your radio behind you so that we don't get any feedback. And other than that, we'll be all good. Also, if you miss any of our shows, you want to go back and listen to something, you want to hear it again, you can find us on YouTube, UCYTV, or just Google Anti-Media Radio, or go to the radio tab on theantimedia.org, and you can find your way to our past shows from there and kind of go from there. We talk about a lot of different topics. We have different guests all the time. We're working on getting more and more awesome guests that are very knowledgeable in different fields on the show. We're adding a producer that's going to be starting to work with us. In fact, tonight is his first night. How you doing out there, Jaime?
Pretty good, man. Listening in on you.
All right. I don't know if you guys could hear him, but he's there. So keep that in mind. We're working to improve the show in every way we can, technically, with our talent that calls in and all that stuff, making it try to make it flow a little smoother. But anyway, without delaying any further, I want to get into this this story that is about the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. And most people out there listening that haven't read the article, the first thing that probably jumps to your mind is probably Three Mile Island. That's the one that's pretty publicized. That's the one that's in the history books. But no, that isn't the worst nuclear disaster in U.S. history. In fact, the worst one has been actively covered up for decades. And it happened in Los Angeles, where basically right now lies the largest, most populated metropolitan area in the entire country and one of the largest in the world. So, Kerry, what can you tell us about this story? Because, I mean, this thing is huge. First of all, it's a two-part story, so if you guys go over there and you want to look at it while we're talking about it on theantimedia.org, the first installment is called The Worst Nuclear Disaster in U.S. History That You've Never Heard About. And if you get, once you get through that, at the bottom you can click to part two, and the part two is all about the cover-up. We're going to get through both parts tonight, so hopefully we can get through all that before the show ends. But anyway, without any more lagging, what can you tell us, Kerry?
Okay, so I can tell you that I actually grew up about 10 or 15 miles from where this disaster happened back in 1959, and I never even knew that this facility existed. So this is something that it's been under wraps for decades. Part of the reason the location was chosen is because it was sparsely populated, and North American Aviation, which was a very powerful military industrial complex company that gained a lot of power in World War II, they decided to build up this facility called the Santa Susana Field Lab out in between Simi Valley and the San Fernando Valley. So this is north of Los Angeles. The San Fernando Valley is still Los Angeles County. Simi Valley is not. But anyway, they set up this facility in between these two valleys, and it was supposed to be for nuclear research. So they set it up in 1947, and it was for both civilian and military practices. I believe in 1953, they set up an extra area to the facility. And so it had been separated into three. They added Area 4. And this was in conjunction with the Atomic Energy Commission, which is sort of the bureaucracy, whatever you want to call it, the commission that was the precursor to the Department of Energy. So together, between government power and corporate power, they decided to start nuclear testing. And everything was going fine. The facility was actually the first to launch a civilian nuclear power plant in 1957. But 2 years later, there was a horrible disaster and accident in Area 4, which is what housed that civilian reactor. But apparently what happened, according to whistleblowers who have been speaking for about 6 or 7 years, but the distinction on why this story is now important is a local NBC affiliate out here broke the news. They did a year-long investigation, 15,000 pages of documents, Freedom of Information Act requests, and they started piecing together the story of how bad this was and how much it was covered up and how it's affecting the communities. And it is really just, it's sort of draining to see how bad it is. But they spoke to a whistleblower. His name's John Pace. And according to him, what happened is, I'm just going to read you from the article. He says he's spoken out in recent years because of his guilty conscience. And as he said, the radiation in that building got so high, it went clear off the scale. They were not able to contain the radiation that was leaking from the reactor. And an internal government memo showed that 300 times the allowable amount of radiation had leaked that night. And John Pace, who was a 20-year-old worker in the plant when this happened, was sort of expressing to the NBC reporters what a dilemma they had, because what he said is their choices were keep the reactor closed and let a Chernobyl-style explosion happen and basically destroy the entire region, or let the radiation flow out of the reactor. And that's what they ended up doing. But the wind carried all of that radiation into the Simi and San Fernando valleys. It seeped into the environment. And one of the most infuriating things about this is that when North American aviation chose this location for the plant, they knew that it was a risk. They knew that the weather conditions and the way the landscape was not organized, but the way that the landscape was inherently was going to increase the risk for contamination to flow off site if there was an accident like this, and they chose it anyway. And so getting into all of this really just started to blow my mind. And now 56 years later, people have higher rates of cancer in that region, and
up to 60%
more cancer in areas that were 2 to 5 miles away from the Santa Susana nuclear facility.
And there's like really exotic cancer clusters, mm-hmm, right? Where mm-hmm. there's just these cancers that don't show up anywhere else. Mm-hmm. In fact, there was one that I was reading about that normally only occurs in African American people and Jewish people. Mm-hmm. And a woman came down with this cancer, and people are kind of baffled by it because mm-hmm. she's not African American, she's not Jewish. And so now people are starting to look at this radiation as maybe the cause behind it.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was one woman who had worked at the Santa Susana Field Lab for, I believe, 10 years, somewhere in there, a very long portion of time. And she says she has bladder cancer, which is one associated with radiation. And she says 14 of 15 houses on her block got cancer. And she lived right near the facility. And even further, the CDC is still paying out compensation payments to this day to people who worked at the facility and developed cancer. And this is before, during, and after this huge nuclear disaster. And at the time, the government lied to the public. They said nothing about it until 6 weeks later, and then they said that it was a minor equipment failure. And what this whistleblower said when discussing that they lied, he flat out said, what they had written in that report is not even close to what actually happened. To see our government talk that way and lie about those things that happened, it was very disappointing. And this is someone who carried that guilt of being there and letting it happen for decades. And I think in 2009, he started speaking out, but this is the first really in-depth investigation of putting all of these little pieces together to figure out how bad it really is.
And it's still in the conscience of the community up there, because I have a really good friend that's from there, and you go up there and people still know about it and still kind of understand it is a cluster, and it's still going on.
Absolutely. And there's evidence, too, that the EPA, so, I mean, it's insane how many different departments are implicated, but the EPA is one of them, though they weren't directly involved. But there's evidence that they may be lying about how contaminated the soil actually is. So we know it's contaminated, but they're lying about how severe it is. And it's something like 20,000 times more radiation maybe in the soil than they're letting on.
Exactly. And that, it's just horrifying. And so, you know, as you said earlier, Carrie, when they initially built this facility, it was a relatively unpopulated area. Mm-hmm. You know, this is back in the 50s when LA was way smaller than it is now, especially up there on that north side. You know, LA was a lot smaller. The population really started blowing up in LA after the 60s, the 70s, 80s. I mean, the population just kept getting bigger and bigger. Even to this day, it's still growing. But, you know, here's the problem that I see, and this really plays into the really the just evilness. I don't know how else to describe it here of what's gone on, because, you know, when this first happened in the 50s, okay, maybe it wasn't as bad or whatever because there wasn't that many people around. And yeah, we've done a bunch of nuclear testing in Nevada and places like that where it's not causing that big of a problem right now because no one lives there anymore. You know, people still don't live there. The problem with this case here is that this radiation went and contaminated a bunch of ground area, and then years later they started building houses on top of it mm-hmm. without ever cleaning it up. Mm-hmm. And so all these poor people mm-hmm. that got sold houses or moved in to this area and bought into the developments out there, now they're just sitting, living right on top of radioactive waste, basically.
And I do want to point out that within this status paradigm, I think you know, to an extent, you can make an excuse for the government having this accident. You know, it was 1959 and they weren't exactly sure what they were doing and they were trying to provide power to their community and it was an accident and it happened and it was horrible, but they're just people and this is, you know, these things are bound to happen. And, you know, fine, if that's what you believe, okay, I'm not going to sit here and argue with it. But the fact that they lied to cover it up to me is enough to show their intentions. Because if they were really concerned about community well-being, they would have said, hey, look, guys, we were working on this really cool project. It had a bunch of depleted uranium and sodium in it, but we had really good intentions and we screwed up and now it's leaking all over the place and you should probably evacuate. But they didn't do that. They couldn't be honest to the public. They couldn't actually look out for the public safety. That was not their concern. And that's because it was being driven by corporate interests. And this company, North American Aviation, would eventually pass ownership on to something like four or five different corporations before Boeing bought it in 1996. And this is after Rocketdyne, which is the company that owned it before Boeing. This is after they paid out a settlement to a children's summer camp that was right next to the facility when the EPA found indisputable amounts of radiation in their soil, on their property. And then this institute called the Brandeis-Barden Institute sued. They got a settlement from Rocketdyne, and they told NBC4, one, they refused to speak with NBC4 directly. Two, in their statement, they said that the EPA certified their soil as safe in 1995, which is the exact same year they sued the Santa Susana Field Lab and Rocketdyne and all of the corporations involved for contaminating their soil.
So they sued, got a settlement, and now they're saying it's all good.
Yes. You know,
and so it was probably part of the settlement, in fact, that they probably can't really talk about it because it's probably part of the fine print that said, hey, look, we're going to give you this X amount of millions of dollars. Now shut your mouth about it and don't talk to anyone again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically what we see going on. And now one fact here that I want to bring up about this basically summer camp is that they were bringing in like 30,000 kids a year, right?
Every year, 30,000 students.
30,000 kids. I mean, this is absolutely ridiculous. Now, before we go on a little deeper into this cover-up, because that's a big part of it, I want to take a couple calls on the line. First off, I'm going to go to Manny Aguilar from 818. Manny, you live in the LA area. How do you feel about this?
Well, I've been listening to that. I just really, we've always complained about smog and stuff like that. And of course, you know, oil spills, you know, has really devastated a lot of areas and stuff like that. So just kind of really crazy and stuff like that. I mean, as you see, you get the lawsuit happening down there in San Diego with, Monsanto and stuff like that. And just, you know, I'm really concerned about stuff like that because, I mean, it's already bad enough that the smog is just at some levels, man. It's just amazing. And it seems like it's worse when it's hot, you know, and it was hot this weekend. I mean, it was just, and man, I tell you, I know how hot it was. I was marching, you know, on the 26th, but we'll talk about that later.
So Manny, you live in LA, man, and now that this news is breaking, and keep in mind, we're the first news outlet to make this into a national story here because it had remained a local LA story for some reason, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I mean, how do you feel about the fact that you're living in a place that could be potentially contaminated by radiation, and the government decided, hey, you know what, it's for your own good, let's just go ahead and not tell the people that are living there about this. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's kind of really scary and stuff like that. And, you know, for myself, you know, obviously, but more as an activist too, because, you know, a lot of people, you know, can be contaminated, you know, at a very young age and stuff like that. I feel bad for the pregnant mothers and stuff like that because, you know, it's just drinking water and God knows how deep this is and stuff like that. And the one thing I will tell you, all this stuff reminds me of Mexico City, Mexico, because the smog problem down there, there was people actually walking around. I remember one time we were in Mexico City, we were walking around masked and stuff like that, and I'm starting to see some people not actually wearing a complete mask, but wearing one of those, what do you call those in English, the ones that the doctors just to cover your nose and mouth. You know what I'm talking about? The white
yeah, those little white cloth mask. Yeah, man, I was in LA last weekend. And I saw several people walking around wearing masks out there, presumably for the smog, or I don't know if they're just concerned about catching the bird flu or whatever. But yeah, man, I've noticed that too. People are walking around LA just wearing masks just for their own health. Maybe rightfully so, now that we're seeing, you know, now that we're seeing what's going on with this this radiation leak. I mean, it's like for the people that were taking those precautions, more power to them. You know, they were instinctively doing the right thing. I want to go to our next caller here from 505. You've been on the line for a few minutes. How's it going? You're live on the Anti-Media Radio. Do you want to chime in on this story? 505, if you're there, let us know. If not, we're going to have to drop your call. All right.
I had to drop
505, unfortunately. We have another caller from 206. I think that's Cassius. How are you doing tonight, Cassius?
Hey, what's up, man? I'm doing great.
Hey, man, we're talking about this crazy story that we broke today about this massive nuclear spill that happened in the 50s in the Los Angeles area, but it's never been cleaned up. Therefore, it's still contaminated with radiation, and potentially millions of people can be affected by this. How do you feel about this?
Oh, yeah. That reminds me of Hunter's Point in San Francisco. I don't know anything about the L.A. one, but it brings to mind this ex-military base that shipped out nuclear weapons in the nuclear era in World War II and post-World War II in San Francisco, Hunter's Point. And I know there's a lot of sites like that in America, so I'll add it to my archive of things to be aware of. Damn. You want to explain more about it?
Yeah, you know, there's also plenty of other spots in the U.S. that have been contaminated by this radiation, and then, you know, uranium mines on Native American lands and all kinds of things like that. So we're just going to continue going into this story because it's a really, you know, there's a lot to unpack here. So we're gonna shift into part two of this report because what's been going on with this radiation is that there's been actively a massive cover-up between not only the government, but between a bunch of these companies, and obviously the media isn't really covering it either. So I'm gonna go back to Carrie now because I think we need to kind of figure out why is this catastrophe been covered up for so long?
That is a very good and complex question. Before we move forward, I just want to note a couple things, which is that at the very beginning, they did try to clean up the contamination, but they didn't extend their cleanup anywhere beyond the reactor. So they ended up getting a new reactor after they had cleaned everything out, but they never cleaned the soil. And perhaps most disturbingly, they had these things called burn pits where they would burn all of this hazardous material, and straight up, the smoke would just fly into the air and the wind would blow it into the San Fernando and Simi valleys. And there's one security worker that NBC investigated or identified and spoke to, and he believes that that caused his son's leukemia because he came home covered in radioactive material every day, and leukemia is also linked to radiation. So that's one thing. The second thing in starting to discuss the cover-up is that this was completely secret until 1979, and the government had absolutely no intention of it getting out. What happened is that until 1979, people were led to believe that there was this minor fuel reactor and no radiation leaked to surrounding communities. In 1979, these UCLA students found a record of the Atomic Energy Commission's report about the fact that there actually had been a radiation spill. So that came out, but still no one was admitting that it had affected surrounding communities, and no one was admitting how bad it is. So up until 1979, no one had any idea. In 1979, people started demanding a cleanup, and they didn't really get very far because corporate ownership kept shifting and no one's really been willing to explore. People within government agencies and offices have been denying that there's a need for further study, in spite of the fact that government studies are showing how much radiation there is. So in 1996, this is really where Boeing comes in, because they acquired the Santa Susana Field Lab by acquiring Rocketdyne, which is the company that paid out a settlement to the children's summer camp. And Boeing has pretty much just evaded any minor attempt to initiate a cleanup. And to be fair, according to NBC4, or no, this is actually according to a local paper. It was either, both are cited in the article, I can't remember. It was either the Daily News article, which is cited in part two, or the Simi Valley Acorn, which is a local news publication. But they reported that $250 million has already been spent trying to clean up this mess, and it's still not enough. The soil is still contaminated, and it's still seeping in to the groundwater and into the bedrock at this facility. And so fast forward about a decade, and there's a woman named Sheila Kuehl, K-U-E-H-L. I could be saying that wrong. But she co-authored a bill in the California legislature that passed. It was signed by Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, and it mandated that Boeing has to clean up the facility, a full-scale cleanup as mandated by the Department of Toxic Substance Control, which we'll get into in a moment. Boeing was by law required to initiate this cleanup. They bought the property. It's their property. It is their property that is just leaking radiation everywhere. And Boeing managed to take it to a higher court, which ruled that the standards for cleanup were too stringent. So they didn't have to clean up at all. So this bill was pretty much invalidated, but the California EPA still had the authority to try to force an agreement. And so they managed to lock down the Department of Energy and NASA because both of them had used the facility. And so they agreed to pay for a cleanup. Boeing just flat out refused to sign. They weren't even going to pretend like they cared. And so this has resulted in just an ongoing struggle from activists and from a couple lawmakers who actually care. And they just keep hitting roadblocks because Boeing has managed to buy off pretty much everyone who is relevant to this cleanup. And one of those people is Robert Hoffman, the former chief lawyer of the Department of Toxic Substance Control. And the person who was who replaced him was appointed by someone that Boeing also paid off. So the Department of Toxic Substance Control has thus far not mandated any cleanup for Boeing whatsoever. And Boeing is still getting away with not doing anything. They're expected to release a report pretty soon. It coincided with the release of the NBC investigation. But considering the fact that I believe her name is Lisa Tucker of consumerwatchdog.org, if you've ever heard of that website, she is pretty much convinced. This is what she said. As far as I'm concerned, Boeing is running the DTSC right now. And I'm going to have to agree with that because so far they have not tried to initiate any kind of cleanup. And these are the people who are supposed to be responsible for the cleanup. And Boeing has paid them off.
I mean, this is just, you know, completely.
Wow.
Yeah. And it really shows the collusion, the corporate collusion with the government, the DTSC, which what does that stand for again?
The Department of Toxic Substance Control.
Okay. So, you know, Boeing controls them for the most part. They've donated a lot of the politicians that oversee the DTSC, including Dianne Feinstein. They've given her $30,000. They've given almost $18,000 to the Governor Jerry Brown, $11,000 to Senator Barbara Boxer, $4,000 to Senator Kevin DeLeon. And, you know, these are the people that kind of oversee the DTSC. And so Boeing kind of already has them in their pocket. But then it gets even worse because in 2012, it looks like Boeing literally put together a propaganda strategy to use to influence and target the media to basically just push the story out of the way and kind of just downplay it as much as they can. What can you tell us about that?
Well, okay, so the myth that this PR team was trying to perpetuate was that Santa Susana Field Lab poses no risk to human health today. And I just want to point out that this kind of a claim is... I've lost sleep the last few days getting into this story, but it's particularly concerning because there was this study that we were discussing a couple minutes ago that rates of cancer were up to 60% greater than in other regions. And this was based in a 2007 study on the time period of 1988 to 2002. And they found that certain kinds of cancers were increased, especially close to the Santa Susana Field Lab. And I want to caution, the report itself noted that more research was needed. Like, this is disclosed in the article. No one's saying that it's absolutely confirmed, but it's a sort of study. It was conducted by a University of Michigan researcher. He's a PhD in epidemiology. So he sort of knows what he's talking about. And he cautioned, yes, we need more research. But I think that a study that comes up with increased rates of cancer up to 60%, you know, you would think that that would be enough to warrant further study. But the most ridiculous part of this is that this study was commissioned by the ATSDR, which is I have to look this up because I keep confusing the DTSR, but it's the CDC's version of toxic substance control. And so this agency decided to task this University of Michigan professor with finding out if there was anything dangerous in the region in 2007. In 2009, the ATSDR comes out and says that there is no threat to surrounding communities. And this is only 2 years after a study that they commissioned said that there was. And so the levels of collusion, I mean, it pervades every single avenue you could possibly hope to go through to find a cleanup, to find any way to get a cleanup. And the ATSDR, same entity, just agreed to do a study on the health effects in the region 56 years later, and it's only because a resident petitioned and he got enough signatures. So they're going to do one study and see if it has any bearing on why people are getting sick. Oh, but sorry, the whole point of mentioning that, I'm sorry, I'm getting lost in my research again, but the whole point of mentioning that is that Boeing took this study and they attempted to construe it as meaning that there was no contamination. And this is to the point where his name's Hal Morgenstern. This is the chief University of Michigan researcher, someone who had warned that more research was needed. The fact that they twisted his study led him to write a letter to California State Senator Joe Simitian. And he said, "I would like to make it clear to your committee that Boeing's claim made about the conclusion of our study is false. We did not conclude that there was no excess cancer in the community surrounding SSFL. Furthermore, Boeing's quotes from our report were taken out of context, and they failed to report our specific findings that contradicted their claim." And so if you're manipulating data to the point where the guy who wrote the study is having to call you out, I'm pretty sure that you're having to resort to some pretty sordid and shady tactics in order to keep the truth hidden.
Exactly. And, you know, we see this over and over. It's not just in this case. I mean, this is the same tactic that is the same tactic that's carried out by many special interest groups. In fact, we have another story we're working on that's going to be out soon regarding pesticide research. And we were in contact with a scientist at a university that conducted a study. And when his study didn't line up with corporate interest, you know, they basically tried to debunk his story. They tried to more or less assassinate his character, say that it was unsound science. And then they commissioned another study that, surprise, surprise, came out to the conclusion that was in their favor. And this is exactly the pattern that we're seeing with this story as well, where it's, you know, one study in 2007 says, hey, there's up to 60% rise in cancer in areas that are near this, where this leak happened. And then 2 years later, it's, oh no, there's no risk at all. Our bad, you know what I mean? And so, you know, what we're seeing here is a total cover-up. We're seeing the influence of money and science, quote-unquote science. You know, you can't even really consider some of this stuff science, because you got to look who's funding it and who it benefits. And obviously here, the 2009 study benefits Boeing, a multi-billion dollar company that gets hundreds of billions of dollars in contract from the government every year. And from, you know, the government is at least partially on the hook for this spill. So they benefit from a study that shows that there's nothing going on either. This is just crazy, man. This is crazy. So let's go back to the callers. To get a little bit of a reaction here. Go ahead, Manny.
I was just going to say, this deal reminds me of that movie, you know, Aaron, how do you pronounce it, Brockovich?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really does, man, because, you know, you never know how your waters can be contaminated and stuff like that, and it's just, and we need water and stuff like that, so it just kind of, you know, and so, yeah, by the way, I want to say good reporting on that, Carrie, by the way.
Thank you very much.
Cassius, go ahead, man. I know you had something to say.
Yeah, man, I think that you pretty much hit the nail on the head. Both of you hit the nail on the head with this. That's pretty much exactly what I was going to say. This is representative of clearly a pattern, and I think documenting and putting in stone the exact, you know, instances of this collusion, and then maybe compiling all these instances of collusion and then having an organized database of evidence to you know, get this idea out, that this is the way it works. You know, collusion happens, studies and ideas are corrupted, and that's the primary motivating factor in a lot of scientific research. So I think assembling instances like this and putting it into a tangible form of proof is essential. So this is like the first step in a process of, you know, discovering the motivating factors behind scientific research and behind these conclusions. And yeah, I think this is just great work. This is truly great work. I think assembling these instances of collusion and then having them as a tangible form of proof to people is, you know, the next step.
Exactly, man, exactly. And that's what we're trying to do, is really lay it out there for everyone to see this corruption, and hopefully it'll help people question what's going on with their environment, with their government, with these mega corporations that are basically welfare queens. I mean, Boeing is the biggest welfare company out there. I mean, they get hundreds of billions in government contracts every year. I mean, you know, it's so deeply in bed. with the government. And in fact, you know, the government funds a lot of their research. A lot of the nuclear research that was conducted by these private corporations, funded by the government, with help from the government. In fact, the government had buildings set up that they operated on this, at the location of this, of where this leak was. So I mean, this is just a huge collusion thing. I've shared this story with a few of my friends that are directly impacted by this leak, that were in that area, that have subsequently developed some illnesses that may or may not be related to what's going on over there. And of course, we don't want to jump to any conclusions about that. But I'll tell you one thing: people are getting absolutely pissed about this, and people are going to be demanding some major action. Whether we're talking about class action lawsuits, whether we're talking about cleanups, or you know, whatever, you name it, man. People are going to be demanding something happens, and there's millions of people in Los Angeles that are going to find out about the story in this week, and they're going to be really upset, and they're going to be looking for answers. So hopefully we can start getting some answers out there for people. Before I, Carrie wants to say a few more words before I go on to that, I just want to throw this out there. Anybody out there listening to this, anybody out there that read this story, we're probably going to put this video out there for more people to see later on too. Anyone with any information on this story or with any leads for us, please email us, whether it's tips@theantimedia.org or carrie.wedler@theantimedia.org. Send us an email, and you know, we're trying to dig up as much information on this leak as possible, because it's time that we get some accountability. And this instance is the perfect chance for us to finally hold these guys accountable. You know what I mean? They've been poisoning us for a long time, whether it's through Monsanto poisoning the San Diego Bay right here in my backyard, literally 500 yards away from here. They poisoned the entire bay. Can't even eat the fish that we fish out of the bay, man, because they poison the whole thing. So we need some accountability. This story is a perfect one because there's so many people in LA. This is such an egregious act. It's so well documented, the cover-up, the manipulation, the propaganda coming out of Boeing, the government's, you know, role in this thing. It's the perfect example that we can really use to draw some attention to these cover-ups, to these mass poisonings, to this negligence, whatever you want to call it. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways of describing this: corruption, you know, just pure evil. I don't know what you want to call it, but there's all kinds of different ways of looking at this. And I think this story is the time to really crack this open and start getting some accountability. Our last investigation on Nestle has been yielding some really good results. Hopefully this one will be the same. Carrie, go ahead. I know you have some final thoughts on this before we move on to the next story.
Sure. Just a couple of things. First, I would like to really encourage everyone to take a look at the original NBC4 investigation, which is linked in our article. You can find all of the primary documents there. You can find the memos, the government memos. You can find the studies. You can find Dr. Morgan Stern's letter to the California legislature complaining his work had been manipulated. And I just really encourage you to check that out yourself. You don't have to believe what I say. You don't have to believe the way that I documented. But if you look at the original sources, I think that may be a little more convincing than anything I could ever write. And I just also want to note that NBC4 was pretty explicit in saying that they had a really hard time finding information for this article, and that documents had been destroyed. They encountered multiple roadblocks. So it's pretty clear that people are trying to keep this covered up. And I find it really interesting that the story was not covered. And I think, Nick, you found an article that was sort of criticizing NBC4 because it wasn't really a secret and people already knew about it, but that's not the reality. Because what their Freedom of Information Act requests really showed was how much collusion has gone on, how much there's been a concerted and coordinated effort to keep these things secret and to downplay the health effects. So, no, it's still secret. People don't know about it. Most people who are reading this article, people who are hearing about this story today, had no idea. I grew up right there and I had no idea. And so with that, I really just want to say that as much as it was actually a civilian reactor that blew up, ultimately the reason that there has been absolutely no recourse for this is the military-industrial complex. And Santa Susana Field Lab was host to plenty of missile tests, and it was very deeply embedded with the military-industrial complex. And yeah, we can say that they weren't testing nuclear bombs, and so we can't blame American militarism and American exceptionalism and adventurism on an event like this. But at the end of the day, the reason Boeing doesn't have to fix it is because they have acquired so much power through that military might. Because they make dozens of billions of dollars every single year. They sell arms to the United States government. They have a near monopoly on that. They tie with Lockheed Martin. They also sell weapons to the rest of the world. They sell fighter jets to the Saudis. And I'm sure a lot of our viewers are aware of what the Saudi regime is like. So just keep in mind that this is what happens when you allow corporations that profit off of murder and death to amass so much power. And a lot of people die in the process, and it's not even because of war. It's just because of the mistakes that these people make while trying to create weapons that can wage war.
Yeah, great point. And also, I want to make a point about the media and the fact that they've more or less played a complicit role here, because even at to this date, we more or less broke this story into a national story here, and nobody's covered it. I know by tomorrow, we have a bunch of affiliate websites that repost our stories, so tomorrow on alternative media, people are going to see this story all over the place. But are we going to see this shit on CNN? That's yet to be seen. We haven't seen it yet. Why haven't they been doing their job? You know what I mean? And make sure you guys read part two. You'll see the blueprint that Boeing was using to influence the media. I mean, this is part of their business plan. They plan part of their budget to influence media on all platforms. In fact, one of our awesome writers, John Vibes, wrote a story about the military-industrial complex recently, and I don't know if you guys have seen these advertisements for Boeing on TV and on websites and stuff. Boeing does not have any consumer goods. They have no business advertising on the Super Bowl and shit like that. The reason they do that is to provide advertising funds, to provide leverage over top of media companies to say, hey, if you cover us with bad press, we're going to pull our advertising funds. Boom, that's their leverage. And these are the strategies these guys use. Part of these massive corporations, whether we're talking about Wall Street, whether we're talking about the military-industrial complex, part of their business plan is public relations, propaganda, influencing our opinions and that kind of thing. So that all that stuff needs to be exposed. And the only way to do it is by people out there on social media sharing these stories and allowing everyone in their families and friends, especially if you have friends in Los Angeles County, to read these stories and find out about it, so that way they can hold these guys accountable. Because otherwise, as you can tell, all of these politicians are already in the pocket of Boeing, and Boeing's basically, since they own the property now and are in charge of it, they're the ones that are going to be on the hook. They already own the politicians. The politicians aren't going to hold these guys accountable. Only the enough people finding out about this, forcing the politicians to do something about it, that's the only way we're going to get any kind of accountability out of this. And one last thing I wanted to touch on the burn pits from the story, these things are horrible. They were using them in Afghanistan as well, and we did a story back in July about the burn pits where Halliburton was having a bunch of the U.S. troops operating burn pits where they were burning a bunch of toxic materials and chemicals and stuff, and a lot of these guys came down with cancer as well. And then Halliburton is suing them because they're trying to file a lawsuit against Halliburton because a bunch of these guys got cancer. And Halliburton is suing the veterans that have cancer to get them to shut up. I mean, this is not even a joke. This is not The Onion. So, there's no telling how low Boeing is willing to stoop on the story, what kind of lies, manipulation, bogus science that they want to pull out. And keep in mind, some of the quotes from Boeing is that they want quote-unquote real science to prevail here. And, of course, the real science is only the stuff that it falls in their favor.
It's what's being suppressed.
Exactly.
I just want to make one note, because previously I did not clarify what the ATSDR is. For anyone who is wondering, it is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, and it's a division of the CDC, just so it's out there.
Oh, man, this is a crazy story. Carrie did such a great job on it. Really can't praise you enough on this story. You spent a long time researching and writing it out, and we chopped it down from how many pages?
Yeah, you could write a book on this. I am still digging into the details, and I'm sure there are many more things that I will find. So again, if you have any information, if you know of anything, please feel free to contact us at the Anti-Media. I am more than happy to look into it, because I want to get to the bottom of this if there is one.
Yeah. So yeah,
this is some of the most hard-hitting information we've may have ever delved into this deep. Like, I'm really proud of you, seriously.
Thank you, Cassius.
This is really good. This is the kind of stuff that I want to see. Like, this is so incredibly telling of just the nature of these bureaucratic systems. I mean, there's so much to learn about just the general way of these forces, this collusion. There's a lot to learn in this about all kinds of things. A lot to learn.
Yeah, man. There's so much, and I'm hopefully we can get some more info out there. While we're on this topic of the military-industrial complex, there's a story today that went up on the anti-media. We pulled it from commondreams.org and added a little commentary. And this one really just it hit me like really hard. I mean, you can ask anyone here at the office. I know you guys don't know who's here, but it really tore me up. But today or last night, the U.S.-backed Saudi campaign in Yemen. Anyone not familiar with what's going on in Yemen, it's pretty much a similar scenario to what's going on right now in Syria on a smaller scale, because Yemen's a really small country and a lot less population. But there is a civil war. There's a revolution going on in Yemen. The Yemeni government is long time backed by the U.S. and by the Sunni states, Saudi Arabia, and you know all those lovely democracies. But there's a civil war that's been going on there, and the rebels, which have for a long time been supposedly accused of collaborating with Iran, which if you look at all the evidence, there's not really it's not much of a collusion, really. It's just a really convenient propaganda term to dehumanize these rebels. But these rebels have started making major gains. In fact, they took the capital several months ago. The dictator of Yemen has fled the country to Saudi Arabia. But what happened was, as these rebels and what I consider an organic revolution going on there in Yemen, now they're fighting up against the U.S. We're backing up a fight to quell a popular revolution in Yemen.
Wow.
And so that's going on right now as we speak. There is Saudi Arabian-led airstrikes. Now, keep in mind, this is a U.S.-backed incursion, meaning that we're supplying them with logistics. We're supplying them with surveillance. We're supplying them with intelligence. We're giving them coordinates of where to strike. So what happened today or last night, depending on which time zone you're in, is the Saudi-led airstrikes hit a wedding, and it killed 70 innocent civilians.
Another wedding?
Were women, many of which were women and children. And, I mean, this is just, I mean, it's just sickening. And as Kerry mentioned a few minutes ago, Boeing is selling the jets to the Saudis via the U.S., and we're giving it to them. Many times, you know, we just give them the stuff in order to keep them within our sphere of influence, keep their oil flowing and all that stuff. And again, it's a U.S.-backed incursion. Our tax dollars, everything that, you know, every paycheck you get and your income tax is taken out, everything you buy and your sales tax goes into, it's going into helping us bomb this wedding. 70 people dead. Because one bomb dropped that, who knows, we may have even supplied them the coordinates of where to drop it at, because we're supplying them with the intelligence. And again, this is Saudi Arabia. I can't harp on this country enough. They operate on a really twisted version of Islam. Many people would say that it isn't even Islam. It's something that's twisted, just like many of these quote-unquote Christians in the U.S. think we need to go bomb countries to spread peace and love. This is the same thing that's operating over there in Saudi Arabia. It's a way to control their population. Again, it's do as I say, not as I do. I mean, they have one of the strictest cultures in the world. They don't even let women vote. They don't even let women drive. Yet their dictators are out there. The princes are out there doing cocaine and having sex with prostitutes and all that good stuff. But yet the average citizenry aren't even allowed to go on Twitter and say anything bad about the government. We're talking about the same Saudi Arabia that literally just crucified a guy. They cut a guy's head off and nailed him to a cross because he was a protester.
He was 17.
Yeah, and he's a young guy. Cassius, I know you've got some information on this, man. What can you tell us about what went on over there with this whole crucifixion thing?
Yeah, so I wrote an article the other day about how hold on, let me pull up the article. Well, they haven't crucified him yet, but they condemned him to crucifixion. He was 17 years old at the time of his arrest. He was protesting. That's literally all he was doing. He was accused of having a firearm, I believe, and pretty much just protesting. I don't really know if he actually had a firearm or what else, but someone from Saudi Arabia, an ambassador to the UN from Saudi Arabia, was granted a key human rights position at the United Nations, disregarding, you know, the human rights abuses of Saudi Arabia, incredible human rights violations. So basically this person was granted the power to elect other people to this UN human rights panel. It seems to be a pretty significant power. I don't really know what this panel is supposed to do, but it's some kind of panel that's supposed to analyze countries practicing of human rights. It's kind of shadowy. I couldn't find that much info on what this panel actually does, but yeah, the relationship between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia is pretty crazy, and they supply, you know, Saudi Arabia with weapons, and that's this whole U.S. military-industrial complex. You can find connections between Boeing and Saudi Arabia, the U.S. or the Israeli intelligence corporation. Oh, man, what's it called? I forgot what it's called, but, you know, this whole conglomerate is attached to Saudi. What's that?
Sorry, me and DB, I think we both had an answer for you at the same time. You talking about the Mossad?
No, not the Mossad, but this other private corporation. I forget what it's called. But, yeah, man, you know, this conglomeration is, it's fully, Saudi Arabia and the U.S. are fused, you know, it's like Syria and Russia.
It all fleshed out after World War II because basically, Roosevelt blew our entire oil reserves in World War II because we were funding literally the entire Allies. We were funding the Great British Empire. We were funding India. And when I say that, I mean we were providing them the oil. So we drained our whole reserves. The U.S. was sitting on the exact same reserves that Saudi Arabia had volume-wise, and we blew it all out in World War II. And to keep the war machine going, we had to essentially become this vassal state of Saudi Arabia just so they'd keep pumping us that crude.
Yeah, man, and if we look at it, you know, what we see going on is the arms flow in, right? We make the arms and we send them the arms, whether we're talking about jets or tanks or Humvees or just sheer amounts of machine guns and assault rifles, and the oil flows out and it flows to us and it flows out to the Allies, to NATO, and it keeps all these wars going around the world, man.
And conversely, Saudi Arabia, along with Israel, we're like an unholy trinity because we all kind of scratch each other's backs and provide military hardware and backup. I mean, think about what Israel does for our country. They have patents on literally our entire defense mechanism. So we're intertwined for better or worse. And honestly, it looks like it's going to be for worse because of these two countries' human rights violations over there getting just ridiculously out of control.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And
well, I want to take the opportunity, Nick, to also say what the government has been doing in Mexico, sending all this equipment. You know, there's a lot of talk. Basically, we canceled elections in the state of Guerrero. There will be no elections this year for the state of Guerrero. It's official already. There's no need to have, talk to a lot of people down there, journalism. Why do we need elections in the area? I agree with them. We don't need elections. For what? Stuff like that. And so, you know, this, that's what the march was all about on Saturday. It's the 1 year anniversary of the 43. They were killed by the narco gobierno and stuff like that. And so it's just a big tragedy and stuff like that. And they still haven't accounted for them, you know, what happened, why they did it and stuff like that. Nobody wants to talk and stuff like that. Yeah. So.
Yeah, man, I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, the U.S. is playing a role in supplying arms to a bunch of illegitimate regimes, you know what I'm saying? The illegitimate government of Mexico that literally made 43 protesters disappear. And, you know, what in the hell are we doing? And how are Americans buying into this shit? Because in 2011, and this is one of the major points I wanted to bring up here. In 2011, we went and overthrew an entire government in Libya. which, by the way, was the most stable country in the entire continent of Africa. We went overthrew their government because we said, hey, this guy is killing protesters. And we said, okay, let's go overthrow the government. We sent the drones in. We sent the airstrikes in. We sent in a no-fly zone, and we bombed that guy, dude. We killed him. We killed Gaddafi and overthrew the government of Libya, and we all know how that turned out. If you don't know, go read up on the anti-media, the real story about Hillary Clinton that the media isn't talking about, because that's one big one that has a lot more implications than Hillary Clinton's emails, and I won't get too far into that. But it brings me back to what Cassius was talking about with this protester in Saudi Arabia. They're crucifying a protester in Saudi Arabia while at the same time overthrowing countries because they supposedly killed protesters. And, you know, we're sitting here best friends with Saudi Arabia. We're backing them up as they blow up entire wedding parties in Yemen. And our government just looks the other way. And at the same time, we say, oh, you know what? Let's go ahead and appoint these guys to a UN human rights position and allow them to dictate, you know, who's abusing human rights around the world. Let's let Saudi Arabia point the finger. What kind of twilight zone are we living in to let our government get away with this shit? It's effing
insane. Because we have no military industrial complex without them.
What was that?
We simply would have no military industrial complex without them, and because the military in this country takes a minimum of half of our budget every year. You can imagine the lobbying. You can imagine, let alone just getting rid of people that get in the way. I mean, that's why this game's not going to end until we, the people here, defund them. I mean, that's really the only thing we got.
Exactly, man. Exactly.
I mean, Saudi Arabia, though, spent millions of dollars just trying to demonize the Iran deal in the United States. I mean, they were basically teaming up with AIPAC. Those were like the two main organizations that spent the most money to demonize that deal. So it's just to highlight the reach of the Saudi empire.
Yeah, man.
And it shows something that Obama's supporting Iran. I mean, we literally have two Middle Eastern power factions fighting over who's going to dominate our domestic policy.
Yeah, it's crazy, it really is. And you know, if anything, this story here, it highlights something, because first of all, Yemen, like I said, from all the research I've done, it's a mostly organic popular revolution in Yemen. And keep in mind, revolutions don't work unless they have the support of the people, right? And so the fact that the Houthi rebels, which are the people in Yemen that are now fighting the Yemeni government, the U.S.-backed, Saudi-backed Yemeni government, they swept the entire country. They took the capital. The dictator had to flee the country, right? And if we're out there going around the world, Obama gave a speech today at the UN saying, hey, look, we're out there spreading democracy. We're making the world a better place. Why are we backing the Yemeni dictatorship if we're talking about democracy? Why are we backing the Saudi Arabian dictatorship if we're spreading freedom? That they don't even let women drive cars out there. Women aren't allowed to leave the house without a male escort from their family escorting them. Women can't even leave the house. So here's what I want to say before the show ends. We're not the U.S. government, the U.S. foreign policy, we're not out there spreading democracy or freedom. We're out there committing geopolitics in the name of empire. We are just upholding our empire that, keep in mind, is very fragile. And we've got to use a lot of guns and bombs and tanks to keep it going, because if we didn't, it'd fall apart in a instant. It really would. So these guys literally have to be on the brinkmanship of World War III with Russia and China just to try to keep this little fragile empire from falling apart, because it's not built on sound ideas. It's built on force, and people don't like that. People want good ideas. They don't want to tank spreading democracy in Yemen. They want to have an organic revolution of people that actually represent them going on. And that's not happening right now in Yemen. It's not happening right now in Saudi Arabia with the dictatorship there. It's not happening in Syria with the CIA-manufactured extremist rebels trying to fight and destabilize the Assad government, because it's all about geopolitics. They're trying to build a pipeline. They're trying to block Russia. They're trying to do all these different things, and they keep feeding us the same exact lie every time. I mean, the whole thing with Iraq is like, oh, my God. Bin Laden and 16 Saudi Arabians blew up the Twin Towers. how about we go invade Iraq, a country that had absolutely nothing to do with it, and tell us that it's about fighting for our freedom? I mean, and people believe this shit. They're believing it right now with ISIS, and I hate to say it, but the majority of Americans are buying into this crap. And yeah, they don't want to tangle us up into another war, but they still believe what the government's saying. Thankfully, the people listening to our show tonight are probably, you know, seeing beyond it all. But that's not enough. We got to keep spreading the information. We need more and more people to find out about this stuff. We got to get it to the point where it's literally unacceptable for the U.S. to go in and establish an empire for business reasons, for economic imperialist reasons. We got to start living by the golden rule and do as we say and actually live by it. Peace out. Thank you for tuning
in. Good night, Nick.
Catch us Wednesday. Anti-Media Radio, 5 nights a week.
I'ma let them know through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.